Well, I'm just sitting here listening to the StoryPath Q&A that they recorded for Gen Con Online this year, and there is some very interesting information that's being told about the new upcoming StoryPath Ultra that's expected to make its debut in the World Below game, and a lot of interesting ideas that are definitely connected to the Trinity Continuum games as well and its implementation of StoryPath, and even the question of, might the core book of the Trinity Continuum be updated with Ultra at some point in the future? Well, hello and welcome back, everybody, to Trinity Continuum Airwaves. My name is Corey Reynolds. I am your host, and this is a show that is all about the Trinity Continuum. And the StoryPath rule set and StoryPath Ultra that is upcoming very much on my mind today, but also on my mind is Ether. We have a Trinity Continuum Ether Kickstarter that is running right now. It's gotten me so jazzed into the subject of the physical Ether. Just going through this Kickstarter and bringing back up all of these things that have been so important to me in the past has gotten me digging back into the question of, is there an Ether that I, as I've said before, I'm super interested in. So I've bought a few new books over the last couple of weeks, just kind of fueling that interest. That I have a couple here that I've really been enjoying. One called Geocentricity, Relativity, and the Big Bang by Russell T. Arntz has been really good. But the one that I'm kind of most interested in that I got, that it came out of left field for me, was this book by James P. Hogan, who is ordinarily a hard sci-fi writer, and he's written a lot of books. He's very popular, but he wrote a book a few years back called Kicking the Sacred Cow. And the subtitle for this book is Questioning the Unquestionable and Thinking the Impermissible. And there's a whole section in there about ether and Einstein and relativity and all of that stuff. So I cannot wait to dig into that. Some of you may find all of that stuff to be just really weird and not worth your time, but I am super interested in it. And ether just keeps driving that interest. But speaking of ether, we've got a lot of updates on that front as well. We've passed a few more stretch goals. We're just now sitting above the $45,000 mark, which means we unlocked another stretch goal at $45,000, which is the Ethernaut Collection 2. So that actually makes two pieces to this. Other like write-ups of fictional characters and whatnot from the Victorian era that are statted out and all that in some sort of companion volume. We now have two pieces to that that have been unlocked through the Kickstarter stretch goal. And also, we've picked up a t-shirt design on Redbubble, so looking forward to seeing what that's going to be. Whenever we talk about a t-shirt design that's released on one of these Kickstarters, I always try to use whatever soapbox I have to say, just make it the logo of the product, like right across the chest. It would look so good, it would be so wearable, and if you want to say something about being a Kickstarter backer, maybe put that on the back of the shirt, you know, like a sports jersey, like right across the shoulder blades in the back, you know, something like Kickstarter backer. But just make the front of the shirt, just have the cool logo for the game or for the supplement. So in this case, it's like Trinity Continuum Ether. I think that would make a fantastic shirt. I would wear it every single time it got done in the wash until I wore it completely out, and then I'd buy me another one. And by the way, that's the way I want all of my t-shirts. I just want them to have like the logo of the game on it. I really got to get the one that says Trinity Continuum. That is in the Redbubble store. It does look very good. I can't wait to get a hold of it. I've been wanting one for Exalted Third Edition for years that just has Exalted Third Edition across the chest. But yeah, I think that they should do that for everything. I think when they did the Exigence, they should have had the Exigence Out of the Ashes logo right across the chest. Would have looked so good. Put the Kickstarter backer thing somewhere else. But anyway, no matter what it is, I'm looking forward to seeing what the design is going to end up being, and I will most likely get it because I'm very excited about the Ether campaign and I want to be able to show that some way. And I feel like, you know, what we might get from that if they do some kind of images and whatnot with vampires and werewolves and Nikola Tesla, it's going to look cool. So even though it might not look as cool as just having the logo, it'll still look pretty cool. So anyway, looking forward to that. Then we're staring down the barrel of a couple of more stretch goals. We've got a digital wallpaper upcoming at $46,000, a VTT token pack at $48,000, and then a third piece of the Ethernaut collection at $50,000. The fact that we're just seeing Ethernaut collection 1, 2, 3, sort of spread out around all of the other things that we typically get, like Jumpstart and ready-made characters and t-shirt and wallpaper. Makes me think that they either didn't have a whole lot of ideas for a companion volume to this, or they weren't expecting the Kickstarter to go as long. Because I feel like if either of those things were true, we would have been seeing a lot more variety in the additional content space than we have so far. So I'm kind of thinking that this is what they think they're going to get, is, you know, all the usual stuff plus a companion volume that just has a lot of statted out characters. So I will be happy to be wrong about that, and would love to see some additional content that's there in the stretch goals. But at this point, I'm kind of thinking that we probably aren't going to see anything too mind-blowing in the next little while. But hey, wait and see. This could really take off in the next couple of weeks, but I'm looking forward to seeing where the campaign goes here toward the end. Very much looking forward to this product. And we have two new manuscript previews that have been released over the last week. And this is the big one. This is the week where we get all of the nuts and bolts and the mechanics of the system, how you use Aether, what are the various gifts and powers of the Squires, Gogs, and Magogs, how do they differentiate from one another, and how do you build characters using those things. So that's what we've gotten this week. There's some really cool stuff here to go through. We just got the one about the etheric gifts today. It's going to take me a little while to dive in and really chew through some of that stuff, but just right off the bat, I can see that, as expected, the Squires are really no different than the Talents in the Trinity Continuum core. We've been talking about that. It's been mentioned before that they're really very much like Talents, which was a little strange to me, to be honest, to think about the fact that you would have these characters in an expansion era like Aether that really didn't do very much with the Aether. But then when you think about the fact that this is like the Victorian literature expansion for the game, this is the Victorian era, you do have characters like Sherlock Holmes, for example, who he's not using any kind of special devices, he's not using any kind of special powers, but he is very much a huge, larger-than-life character within that period of literature. And so the sort of normal humanity that you see is going to be very similar to normal humanity in the baseline Trinity Continuum. And that's actually kind of cool. It's kind of cool because it allows you to do that in a very authorized way in Aether, while at the same time providing lots of options for people who do go above and beyond that. The Gogs with their devices, with their apparatus that they use to harness these Aether powers, and to, you know, it all comes through a device that they've made. This is your typical like inventor, your crazy mad scientist. This is what I expected kind of the baseline to be in Aether, was what they're calling Gogs. And but I get it. I understand why there is a level of humanity that's sort of more normal than that, because it then gives you the range to produce all of these different stories. But the Gogs then using the devices, using those etheric gifts that are channeled through their apparatus, and then the Magogs really taking it to the next level and being able to use etheric energy just innately. And that really bridges the gap between the super science of Aether use and inventions and the spinning of Aether with the more mystical and paranormal ghosts and witchcraft and that kind of thing that this era also emphasizes. So I'm actually excited about them bringing over the mystical. I think I talked about that in the last episode, like tying into some of this supernatural stuff. It's not just high tech anymore. It's not just Victorian high tech. It is also now really having things like mediums and spiritualists and all of that sort of mystical stuff, witchcraft and wizardry, maybe a little bit there. And we talked about how it was bringing the world of darkness sort of into the Trinity Continuum with werewolves and vampires and Prometheans, but it also has a touch of mage and geist in there too, that all of these various sort of paranormal, supernatural things are finding their roots now in the Trinity Continuum. And I, for one, am very excited. And like I've said before, just because this is in the 1890s setting of the Trinity Continuum does not mean that you cannot use this in the modern setting. You can have spiritualists now in the modern settings that draw from these Aether rules. You can have vampires in a modern setting that draw from the Aether rules. You know, you can have characters that find Nikola Tesla's diary and figure out how to spin Aether as Gogs weeks, even in the modern era. So we're now getting a lot more nuts and bolts to add story elements to our adventures, no matter what era they're in. And that's what's so great about this system and the way it's broken down, and just story path in general. And I was really thinking about this when I was listening to Matthew Dawkins yesterday in the Gen Con panel on What's Up with Onyx Path, where he was talking about that they came from games, and how even though you have one that's about they came from Beneath the Sea and these monsters, these B-movie monsters like oceanic horror and that kind of thing, and then the 70s horror movies that are kind of brought into that they came from Beyond the Grave, and the they came from the Cyclops Tomb being more about the Harryhausen and stuff and the Sinbad and all that, and how he's even kind of intended it so that you can take paths and archetypes from different games and combine them with others in order to essentially create anything that you can dream up. And what a cool idea that is. And then I was like, just thinking about that in terms of the Trinity Continuum and being able to mix and match pieces from Aether with Aberrant with Eon and really dial in any style of game and any story that you can dream up. That's actually a very, very cool idea. And it really opens up some possibilities. Like when we get Anima, do you have to play it in 2084? Can we use some of those rules and systems about playing in an online space and bring it back into the modern era with a contemporary MMO and how characters may interact in that? Of course you can. So it's very neat. The more pieces like this we get, yes, you get new eras to explore, new stories to tell, but you also get nuts and bolts that you can use to build on to stories in other eras. You can have a mentalist scion in 1890s, drawing from some of the mechanics and whatnot from the Eon game and bringing it backwards into the 1890s. Why not? It's all one big system. You could do that. So I'm just seeing that more and more as I'm getting into this, and especially listening to Matthew talk about that they came from series yesterday, really kind of opening my mind to the possibilities of how you could use this to create all these different things. But let's talk about some of what we see in the new manuscript releases. Chapter 5, Rules of Aether, has been probably my favorite piece of this manuscript preview so far. It really does give us the mechanics and the nuts and bolts behind all of it, but they have their version of dramatic editing that is told through the Aether lens of that era, some gentle changes to the system, but then they also have a whole section on etheric scale. It really sort of lines up with what you see in Aberrant. I feel like this is sort of maybe what they're doing with this whole story path ultra, taking some of these lessons that they've learned about how they really should, you know, standardize some of these things like scale across the board. It was like in its infancy, maybe, in the Trinity Continuum core book, and then Aberrant really brought it into a maturity. So at some point down the road, do you take all of the mature thoughts that you've had on these various concepts and mechanics and put them together into a new system where you can standardize all of these systems across the board? And that's I think what they're doing with Ultra. But yeah, we see that there with the etheric scale. But then they get into the special environments in Chapter 5. And I found a lot of coolness in this chapter, especially, you know, one of my favorite parts of the story path system, I've made no secret of it, is that I love the way complications work. I think that the addition of complications to a role is probably the coolest idea in the story path system. And I loved hearing them today in the Q&A session saying that if you don't have a complication with a role, you really probably shouldn't even be rolling. That is like the basic component of why you should roll. You know, you can you succeed? Well, you're going to succeed at just about anything you attempt, but can you succeed perfectly, or are you going to face some sort of complication? And I really see them working that in through the newer releases that are coming out in Story Path games. In the earlier releases, complications are mentioned, but often not detailed. I found this a little bit startling as I was going through the Trinity Continuum core book, and even as I was reading through like the Jumpstart for They Came From Beneath the Sea, there's often a mention of maybe you need a complication with this without really a suggestion of what that should be or what that should look like. But now that we're getting into more mature uses of the story path system, you see example complications and whatnot strewn throughout. And so as we're looking through this section in the chapter 5 on special environments, each one of them has a complication that is associated with it. And some of my favorite ones are like in the hollow earth, for example, in the depths of the hollow earth. It says Ethernauts who dare venture into the center of the earth suffer from a +2 complication as they're constantly distracted by the wonders surrounding them or harassed by biting insects and suffer skin irritation from plant barbs. Failure to buy off the complication lands them in a dinosaur nest with protective parents or earns them the attention of a building-sized gorilla. So, I mean, it's just so picturesque. You know, just as you're making checks in the hollow earth, be sure to add this +2 complication. If they can't buy it off, they're going to be so distracted by all the wonder around them that they get waylaid by something. And there's other things that are like that. The Arctic ice had another cool one that they become hunted if they don't buy off the +1 complication. So if they're not paying really close attention, if they're not keeping their head on a swivel as they're moving through the ice floes and whatnot, they could pick up a tail, like some sort of polar bear or something might be tracking them through the ice and hunting them. And so that is very cool. Each one of these things, each one of the different environments has this recommended complication that is added onto it. And I find that to be super descriptive, super picturesque, I guess you would say. Really helps bring the thing alive in a way that most role-playing games talking about new environments just don't do. This is an awesome use of mechanics to bring setting alive. When do you see that? Honestly. So I was very excited about that. There's also a huge section on super science and how you adapt those rules in the core book to Aether by using special consideration when it comes to mystic artifacts and etheric contraptions. But really the mystic artifacts was the part that was just super exciting through here, because it really is. This is a whole new arena that we're opening up for the Trinity Continuum when we start talking about mystic stuff. So very cool to see that there with devices and how the etheric devices have drawbacks and flaws that deal with physical effects, physical damage, physical complications and whatnot. But the mystic artifacts that you create have flaws and drawbacks that are related to social or mental or spiritual things. So again, just very descriptive of what each one of these things is doing. And it actually builds the setting through something mechanical, like a device that you create. So very much like that whole section on new flaws that you can add to it. Most of those dealing with mystical things as well, like the haunted flaw, where the device has a mind of its own. I mean, we're bringing in now intelligent devices or sentient artifacts, sentient weaponry, sentient device. Very, very cool. That's always been one of my favorite parts of fantasy games anyway, like the sword in D&D that can actually speak to you and has its own personality and character, or a war strider in Exalted that has its own personality and character that talks to you and whatnot. All this stuff is very cool. We're now bringing it into the Trinity Continuum, and I can't be more excited about it. All kinds of new stuff with Aether Gates, describing how they work, how you put it together, what it looks like, whether you're a Squire that's spun it up, or whether you're a Gog that's created it, or whether you're a Magog that's just made a rip through reality that creates an Aether Gate. Very, very cool descriptive stuff there, and even a section on how you unwind time. So this chapter has been ultra fascinating, and I want to tell you my favorite part, other than the complications on the special environments. My favorite thing so far of this chapter is actually right on the first page. And I'm always a little sensitive to making the thing that I care about most be on the first page, because it makes people think, oh, you didn't read the rest of it, huh? You just focused on something right there at the very beginning. But actually, one of my favorite things in this chapter is right on the first page, and it has to do with the dramatic editing in Aether and how that works. And what's cool about this is that squires get to use dramatic editing very much like the talents, or exactly like the talents in the Trinity Continuum core. But Gogs and Magogs have it a little bit tougher. They don't get that innate ability to dramatic edit quite as easily, but instead they have to spend a little extra inspiration on getting it done. Or they can trade out that extra point of inspiration for some kind of drawback to them. In other words, get it at the same price as the squires, but with a drawback. And this is what I actually like the best, because this is where, just by doing this one little thing, it brings in so much narrative potential and so much coolness. And the example it gives here is that For Gogs and Magogs, they can reduce the cost by one in exchange for inflicting a non-beneficial condition on themselves or the environment around them. Here's the example. A Magog's eyes might begin to glow red, while a thunderstorm may swirl into existence around a Gog. Boom. Period. That right there is extremely cool. It really isn't even that much of a drawback, is it? I mean, you're going to want to do this like pretty much every time, unless you're just really trying to mute your use of this particular feature. But don't you want your eyes to glow red? Don't you want a thunderstorm swirling around you? Coming up with these cool drawbacks like this is going to be one of the chief fun things in this game if you're playing a Gog or Magog character. I can't wait to make one and play it just to be able to start thinking like this. Like, how is this going to manifest itself? You know, how am I going to look cooler and look powerful as I do the dramatic edit? It reminds me a lot of Everything Everywhere All at Once, and the kind of effects that you see there with the antagonist as she is manipulating the change between the different universes. There are some of those very cool visual effects there. And I personally want to come up with something different like every single time. I think that would just be super, super awesome. And anyway, an amazing chapter. The gifts chapter also came out today, and I have had a chance to look through that some, and I've breezed through there looking at some of the various effects and whatnot, and I do think there's going to be some awesome stuff to talk about there, but I've already run kind of long for today, so I kind of want to stop it right here. But if you have a comment about where we're currently at in the Kickstarter, or just a comment about the Trinity Continuum in general, and you want to have your ideas on the show, call in to our call-in number, 678-369-3214, and we will absolutely put your comment or question on the show. Also, if you just want to send us an email, or if you live outside the United States and making a call to a number like that would be cost prohibitive to you, then just record your voice and send it in an email to trinitycontinuumairwaves@gmail.com, and we will put your thoughts on the air as well. Even if you just want to write a note, I'll read it on the air for you. So anyway, send your comments into us. Love to interact with some of you guys. Love to hear you interact with each other as well. But that's going to about wrap it up for this episode. I'm going to be tearing through these gifts. I'm going to be looking forward to the next sections of the manuscript that we're going to be getting, especially that last one with the secrets of the setting. And then hopefully I will see you in the next one.